as a general premise, the larger national plans are probably a little more focused on this. I think we are seeing challenges with plenty of plans, though, who for one reason or another just cannot get out of their own way. I mean, that's, in my experience, that seems to be one of the common denominators of the plans that are suffering in some of the CAHPS measures, especially the member satisfaction, as well as disenrollment.
You're listening to Inside Health Tech from Apixio. Join us as we explore the intersection of healthcare, data, and technology with leading industry experts. Inside Health Tech from Apixio.
Hey folks, thanks for joining us for another episode of Inside Health Tech. I'm your host again, Mark Scott, Chief Marketing Officer at Apixio. And today I'm joined by quality and star ratings expert, Rex Wallace. Rex, welcome.
Thanks, Mark.
So nice to have you here. And obviously, I know of you and your background, but I was wondering if you could spend a couple minutes and just tell everybody what you do today. What's your role? Where are you? And then we'll poke around on that a little bit later, understanding the why and how.
For sure. Yeah. So I'm a star ratings consultant. So I do eat, sleep, and breathe Medicare star ratings. So I spend my days predominantly helping Medicare health plans improve quality for their members, which are all, as we know, elderly and disabled, right? So I get tons of satisfaction out of that, but it's all around quality improvement. I led stars for a plan, but you know, before doing this, I'm able to say that I walked in the shoes, right, of the people that I'm helping, the plan, the stars leaders at the health plans that I work with. And I think that makes a big difference, right? So being able to empathize with kind of where they are and the pressure they're under and the goals that they have and the mountains they have to move to improve quality in Medicare.
Yeah, definitely understanding what they're living every day has got to be a huge benefit. Okay, we understand today, but you know, I always ask this question. I think it's curious. It's maybe not what drew you to healthcare and what has kept you, but what hooked you into healthcare and what has kept you inside the healthcare segment?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. So when I finished grad school at the University of Arkansas, go Hogs. Right. So living in Northwest Arkansas, a few big employers there, one being Walmart. And actually, so my first job out of grad school was I got right into healthcare with Walmart. I was their benefits design analyst. So I was the only benefits design analyst at Walmart for a year or two. So quickly got into insurance, right? And sort of the aspects of insurance for a big employer. Thought I knew a lot. Got recruited by a consulting firm, left, moved to Phoenix, Arizona, went to work for a consulting firm, Johnson & Higgins, which back in the day was bought by Marsh & McLennan. But long story short, just kind of, you know, got into healthcare, got into consulting and stayed in it. And then I would say the passion just kind of kept rising and then really peaked when I got into stars. I think healthcare in general, there are lots of problems to solve, right? It's very broken in so many places. So there are so many opportunities to make a difference. And I've been fortunate to work for some pretty entrepreneurial health plans who actually, if you raised your hand and said, hey, I want to own member retention, they would let me, right? So I was able to learn a ton, which helped me dramatically when I got into stars, because stars is, as I'm sure we'll get into later in this podcast, right, is it touches everything within a health plan. And having a little exposure to all of those different aspects helped me significantly in sort of understanding how to diagnose a problem and solve a problem and pull a team together and who to pull together and things like that. So I'd say what got me into it was just sort of the convenience probably of living in Northwest Arkansas and a big employer. And that was an opportunity that kind of jumped in my lap. But what kept me in it was, the challenge of stars, which is unlike, you know, I'm biased, obviously, right? But I think it's the, the most challenging and rewarding program out there. And to do it in a matrix environment where people don't report to you, you have to influence them. It just requires a special set of skills. And it's just very challenging and rewarding. Yeah.
Well, thank you. And having that kind of experience early on in your career where you get to own whatever you want and influence and add value each and every day, is that's an amazing place to start and grow your career. So very fortunate that way. Well, let's jump into quality star ratings. For the folks that might be listening to this, and as I've discovered in my many conversations with you over the years, even when you think you understand it, you really kind of don't. So I wonder if you can give us a high-level overview of Quality Stars. What is it? Generally, how does it work? Why is it important? And to lead us in, validate why you're so passionate about it and how it helps people.
Yeah, it's a scorecard, right, for all Medicare health plans that CMS designed. So when a Medicare beneficiary is, when it's time for them to pick a Medicare health plan. So typically they would, you know, historically they would get onto Medicare.gov, onto the Medicare plan finder feature on there in their zip code. And it would predominantly show them the plans ranked by the financial impact it would have. So the premium amount, the cost share amounts, and you know, how much does it cost for the PCP copay, the prescription drug copay. And it was all financial. And there was really nothing on there indicating, you know, which of these plans are really better, really higher quality, serve their customers better, have more focus on the member. So CMS designed this star ratings program predominantly to do that, to help Medicare beneficiaries choose a Medicare health plan based on something other than just the impact it would have on their wallet, right? Which is important, but it shouldn't necessarily drive every decision, especially for an elderly or disabled member who this healthcare is such an important part of life for. So when they designed it, it's bigger than just clinical quality. A lot of people, I think, have this false assumption that, and they'll equate stars with HEDIS.
Yes.
HEDIS is clinical quality, and it's a very important part of the stars program, but stars is so much bigger and more broad than that. So HEDIS, clinical quality, is cancer screenings, what percentage of your diabetics manage their blood sugar, things like that. But stars is, you know, 40 plus measures. It varies a little bit depending upon if you're, obviously, if you're MA versus MAPD, if you have a drug component, or if you're a special needs plan, or you're not a special needs plan. So there are some differences in measure count for those different plans. But by and large, it's more than 40 measures, and they span across 9 domains, across Part C, which is the medical side, and Part D, which is the drug side. Everything from clinical quality to patient safety to operational excellence to, most important now going forward, member experience is a huge part of it, right? So member experience, historically,
I was going to ask you about that, about those changes. I do want to go there, but I'm so glad that you define those two. We've been at a lot of the same trade events and reading a lot of the same information on product portfolios from various companies. And they use it interchangeably as if it means and categorizes the same thing. So that's really, really interesting. But I want you to continue on that, because those star measures are beginning to change into that member sat area. And I wanted to spend some time talking about that and what people should be mindful of, organizations should be mindful of as we go forward as well.
Yeah, you know, stars with all those different categories, right? So it's evolved over time. And that's one of the things that keeps it challenging, right? It's not something set in stone. It's not something where you know what you're shooting for. And if you hit a target, you win. It changes regularly, and it's changing significantly right now. So those different categories I mentioned, and those are just kind of the highest level ones. Historically, HEDIS was the heaviest weighted category of all of those. And that's probably a big reason why a lot of people thought, or sort of equated HEDIS with stars, because HEDIS was as much as 25% of stars all by itself for a long time. But recently, CMS has been pushing plans to heed the voice of the customer, right, in a more significant way. And CMS feels like Medicare Advantage plans have not done that. And I think rightfully so, right? We make it pretty hard on the members. So to make plans really focus on member experience, CMS is adjusting the weight of the different categories. They do this, they've done this before, but never this significantly. Of the 40 plus measures, they historically had a weight, some of them had a weight of 1, some had a weight of 1.5, and then the more clinical outcome important measures were a weight of 3. CMS has increased these member experience measures from 1.5 to a weight of 2 for the last couple of years, and now they're jumping to a weight of 4. So they will be,
oh, wow.
So in essence, beginning with the 2023 star ratings, which are being measured right now in 2021, it's more impactful on stars to make sure your members have a positive customer service experience than it is to ensure they have a positive clinical outcome. That's way different. Wow. than it's been in the past. So these material changes in the weighting just to make plans pay more attention to the customer and make them have a better experience, that's the big change that we're undergoing right now. And that's causing plans to make some dramatic changes in their strategies and their investments, et cetera.
I want to spend a minute talking about that as well on both sides, on the health plan side and then the member side. How are they going to measure the member experience? Like, what are the different, are they doing it through survey? Is it other methods? On the one hand, I was very interested to learn a little bit more about that as well.
So of the 40 plus measures, 16 of them roughly are member experience measures. So 8 of those, so half of the member experience measures come straight from the CAHPS survey. It's a member experience survey conducted in the spring to a random sample, typically of around 800 members, but you can oversample and make that bigger. But a very small sample. So if you have 100,000 members in your contract, 8 of those measures, which that CAHPS survey portion starting next year will be a third of the entire star ratings weight. So a third of your star ratings comes from 8 measures in the CAHPS survey. And typically you get, say, a 40% response. Let's just say you get 350 responses to your CAHPS survey. If you have 100,000 members in your plan, those 350 responses determine a third of your stars score all by themselves, right? So half of the member experience measures are survey-based. They're CAHPS surveys into a random sample. The other half are operational measures, such as voluntary disenrollment rate, your complaints to CMS rate, your appeals timeliness, things like that. So those are more operational measures measured in different ways. But like I mentioned, the disenrollment rate and complaint rate are a couple of big ones. So it's a mix of surveys and operational metrics.
Wow, interesting. So we've had a lot of new plans enter the space, maybe some more heavily focused on member experience as a key differentiator over the last few years. What kind of pressure is this going to put on some of the larger health plans that might be slower moving? And what are you seeing out there? Are they responding well? Is this a big lift for some of those organizations to kind of focus on member experience? Is it just continued focus on going operations and programs?
You know, it's definitely a big lift for a lot of plans. And I don't necessarily think it's the big nationals, right? Like, I mean, some of those are so focused on this and they've invested for so long in this and seen this coming and been I would argue a little ahead of the curve in some cases, at least. Not to say that there aren't smaller plans who aren't incredibly innovative and robust and have been knocking this out of the park too for quite a while. But I think as a general premise, the larger national plans are probably a little more focused on this. I think we are seeing challenges with plenty of plans, though, who for one reason or another just cannot get out of their own way. I mean, that's, in my experience, that seems to be one of the common denominators of the plans that are suffering in some of the CAHPS measures, especially the member satisfaction, as well as disenrollment and complaints, which all are just reflections of how the plan is serving that member, how much oversight they have over their operations area. Is it outsourced with little oversight, or is it really tightly managed internally? I mean, those are things that I see as common denominators when plans are struggling in member experience. And it's going to be a heavy lift, and it's going to require, I really think, some big changes. I think a lot of plans think they can maybe send out warm, fuzzy messages to members and it's going to make all this okay. And I think those warm, fuzzy messages obviously have a place in the overall strategy of improving the member experience or making sure there's a positive member experience. But without solving those foundational issues like paying claims correctly and answering customer service questions correctly, I mean, you're never going to get out of your own way, I don't think.
Yeah, and pushing that experience all the way through the different touch points that the member is going to have is also a big lift, which, to your point, a lot of the large organizations have been fairly well positioned. They have the weight, the leverage, and the ability to focus on it. It's how they've had to grow over the following previous year. So that's great. So, okay, we talked about these changes. Is there anything else coming or on the horizon from your perspective that plans, and I know we're focused on plans here. I want to talk about the member in a minute, but plans should be focused on, concerned about, or just general areas for improvement that maybe have been missed outside of the member experience.
I would say, yeah, two or three key areas. I mean, one, obviously this, maybe even just to touch on another piece of this member experience change, right? Like the CAP survey next March is the one that starts counting as a wait of four. So we have 8 months, 8 months from 7 to 8 months, right? From between now and March. This is a really pivotal time. I mean, the bids that we just submitted to CMS in June be the most impactful bids that we will have ever submitted as it impacts STARS, right? Because those plan changes that members will experience in January will have a significant influence on their on how they respond to the CAP survey questions in March, right? So not just the changes that we made, but how we manage expectations regarding those changes between now and March, right? So one thing, you know, I preach as often as I can is no negative surprises, right? Negative surprises kill CAP scores. So one example is you implement a Part D deductible for the first time in 2022. And you put it in your annual notice of change, your ANOC, thinking that's sufficient notification for the member. The member gets it, doesn't read it. They go in December to the pharmacy, pick up their prescription. It's $10. Then they go in January, and all of a sudden they have a $295 Part D deductible they didn't know about, and they can't take that medication home until they pay that $295, which they don't have, right? So huge negative surprise, huge dissatisfaction driver. And the point I'm making is the importance of handholding members through these plan changes this fall. So knowing all of your benefit changes that you put in place for 2022, who are they impacting and how are they impacting them? So are they increasing the cost share dramatically for a member who's on a certain medication, who maybe you move that medication to a higher cost, a higher tier, and handholding that member through that change, making sure they know about the change, and they, even if it's a negative change, we can't just not tell them and hope for the best, right? We have to really do aggressive outreach and manage these members' expectations. So that by itself is a huge change and a huge action that needs to take this fall. Two other things I would mention. One, we always want more visibility into what measures are coming, right, in the yep. future. And the things we have the most visibility into are really some of the Part D measures around opioids, right, and things like that. So those are, we're pretty confident there will be some new Part D measures. We don't know exactly which ones because several have been added to the display page as sort of the parking lot for future STARS measures. There are several that could come into play soon, but that is a big area of focus for a lot of plans, is anticipating which new Part D measures are coming and when. And there's a lot of discussion and strategy around that right now. And the last thing is the health outcome survey. This is another survey which is a part of STARS, and there are five measures in the health outcome survey, and a couple of them that are heavy weighted are actually coming off of STARS because NCQA is making some changes to those measures. So they're going to come off for a couple of years, but then we think they're going to come right back. So my fear is that a lot of plans are going to say, I'm not going to focus on the health outcome survey measures
at
all.
It's gone now.
Yeah, it's gone. It's not coming back, but it is coming back. And if CMS even told us at a recent conference that they're looking to increase the number of patient-reported outcome measures, which are these survey-based outcome measures like the health outcome survey, they're looking to increase them by 50%. So we know they're not going away forever. If do, they'll be replaced by more. So the health outcome survey, I think, it's largely been neglected in the past, and it too is growing in importance and needs more focus on it.
I mean, certainly with the growth in these value-based care programs, those initiatives, both in member experience and the outcomes that you just mentioned, are key components and continue to drive that. So it's actually good to see. I want to add a question on the member side. You kind of referenced it, but if you're a member, how should you read the star ratings? I mean, how do you dig through it? What should you look for in identifying a plan that you want to be a member of or you want to change to? I mean, turnover is still significant across these plans. What should they look for? Maybe some advice for the member would be great.
Yeah, if I'm a Medicare beneficiary, and all other things being equal, obviously I'm going to opt for the highest star rating, right? So they go up to five, obviously. So CMS says that 4 stars and higher, right, are that's where there are huge financial benefits to a health plan for being 4 stars or higher. So 4 is sort of the magic number for health plans. And I think even if you're on Yelp or something, right, look or Google and you're looking at reviews for a restaurant. I mean, I do this, right? I look for high star ratings. Although I can tell you, one of my first years in star ratings for the when I was working for a health plan, I actually fell from 4 stars to 3.5 stars, and I lost my health plan a lot of money, right? And that was not fun. That was one of the most disappointing times of my entire career. And for the whole next year, I didn't eat at 4-star restaurants. I said 3.5 is fine. Like 3.5 is okay, right? So, but if I'm a Medicare beneficiary and I'm giving them advice, yeah, I'm saying definitely look on Medicare Plan Finder and sort by stars. Now, one thing to note is if you're a 5-star plan, CMS will put a gold 5-star next to your name, right? And say this plan on Medicare Plan Finder for beneficiaries to see, they'll say this plan received Medicare's highest rating. Consequently, if you are a low performer, meaning that you've scored below 3 stars for 3 straight years, you get a kind of the red danger triangle, right, next to your name saying this plan has performed lowly, right, for a significant period of time. And then you're not actually able to enroll in that plan on Medicare Plan Finder. And then if you do enroll in that plan through an agent or a broker, you actually get a letter, you know, at your home saying, are you sure you want to enroll in this plan?
Well, certainly the member experience weighting changes will have an interesting effect on how people read those ratings too. That might help filter out some of the stuff that you just noted. No, thank you. That is great. I have another question for you. I would like to say we just went through, but we're still in it. But we had a fun 16, 17 months, and it was different by state on how open or closed people were during the pandemic that we're still in. I have to keep reminding myself of that. How did or will the pandemic experience affect star ratings programs? How will it affect the care and resources that were provided to members? Is that why some of the change in member experience as well? What do you see there in the kind of the impact in the program from what we just went through?
So the change to the member experience was planned before the pandemic. It was scheduled to come into place. And in fact, a lot of health plans pleaded for CMS to not move forward with it after the pandemic because they thought this is not a fair time to doing this, right? But CMS said, no, we're moving forward and we're going to still make the changes. When the pandemic first happened or very early on, one of the first things CMS did was it said, hey, health plans, we're allowing you flexibility to do things to improve members' access to care, obviously. So things like, even if you didn't include telehealth in your benefits this year, we're going to let you implement telehealth or expand telehealth beyond the level to which you put it in your bid for your benefits for the year 2020. And they also did things like allowing plans to remove their refill too soon edits on the drug side, on the prescription drug side, right? So allowing members pick up medications even before they were due so that they could have a sufficient supply in case they couldn't go back to the pharmacy or if there were stockpile challenges or anything like that. So CMS made all these changes and plans hadn't necessarily budgeted for these changes, but they did them because they needed to do them. And fast forward a year now in 2021, we just had our CAP survey. We just finished in June. And a lot of plans, not everyone, but a lot of plans saw some increases in their CAP scores. And part of that is because, yeah, the member experience weights have increased and plans are putting more focus on it. I think part of it is also because of sort of this post, even though we're not through the pandemic entirely, obviously, but there is this sort of this post-pandemic high that I think a lot of people are on, including Medicare members, where they're able to have some sense of normalcy that they didn't have a few months ago. And I think that's sort of elevated a level of satisfaction. And then I think there is this false measurement in the CAP survey right now based on those flexibilities that CMS allowed plans to have. So they allowed plans to do these things they hadn't budgeted for. Members all of a sudden have, even in this pandemic, they feel like their plan is really offering them these
extra
great resources to have access to care, right? Those things are going to go away at some point because plans didn't budget for them and they can't keep them forever. And when they do, I think members are going to experience a bit of a decline. And I think these CAHPS scores are going to self-correct in the next couple of years when those things happen. So I think that's sort of a long way of answering your question around one of the ways the pandemic has impacted STARS or is impacting STARS is it's, I think, providing a slightly false increase to the CAHPS scores that plans maybe think are completely based on their merits and what they've done. And I think that is largely true. And I think a lot of plans have done a really good job of reaching out to their members during the pandemic and making them feel not so alone. But I think some of it is artificial too. We don't know how the STAR ratings are really impacted yet. We won't know until September and October when STAR ratings come out. You will know the impact because the STAR ratings that come out this fall are the ones that were measured in the year 2020 when the pandemic happened, right? So we don't know exactly. We think because of the disaster relief policy that CMS has, it's allowing plans to choose the higher of, for most STAR ratings measures, they can choose the higher of their 2020 performance or their 2019 performance. And a lot of plans will benefit from that. And a lot of plans think they will actually get a higher score than they would have otherwise, obviously, because they have the ability to choose between 2 years, and that doesn't normally exist. We don't expect that to happen for the 2021 measurement year because the way the disaster relief policy works now is it just applies in the year the incident started. So the pandemic started in 2020, so the relief would only happen for measurement year 2020. That could all change in rulemaking, but it hasn't changed yet.
Well, let's hope for a non-disaster year in 2021. Right. Rex, it's been great. I do have one last question
okay.
I wanted to ask. So as STARS programs have really grown and professionalized with folks like yourself who become experts in the space, have helped health plans and others really focus on the right things, focus on member engagement, plans are performing a lot better than they did. And of course, not all boats are rising. Not everyone's a 5-star. 5 stars is hard to get. But as we see more plans approach 4, as CMS continue, is the way of managing this so we're managing all boats rising and everything being equal again, is CMS managing this through tweaking the measures annually? For example, this weighting on member experience, is that the only thing they're doing? They expand measures over time. But what do you see the future, if you look forward, of STARS programs as it's getting more and more competitive around those ratings?
Yeah, you know, right now, about half of Medicare Advantage plans are 4 stars or higher, and about almost 80% of members are in a 4-star plan or higher. So because the big nationals are 4 stars or higher. I don't think CMS wants or ever intends for all plans to be 4 stars or higher or 5 stars, right? So the whole point, we're graded on a curve, which is another one of those challenging aspects of STARS, right? So I don't think everyone can ever be 5 stars or even 4 stars or higher. I do think everyone rises. And if you look at the way the cut points rise, at least for some measures every year, we see, like you said, I mean, people, you know, health plans are improving. They're a lot better than they were a few years ago at a lot of these measures. So it is working in the sense that it's making plans get better and invest in all of these measures. So, and I think everyone's going to continue to improve. But as they do, cut points will only increase. So the distribution, it may not be exactly like it is now where 50% are 4 and higher and 50% are below 4. But I think that distribution will roughly stay the same looking forward, right? Where plans will always be falling 1 year from 4 to 3.5 because they took their eye off the ball for a second and the industry passed them, which happens all the time. I've been at health plans and I've improved. I remember improving in a measure 5 percentage points in 1 year, but we fell 2 stars in that measure because the industry improved 15 or 20% maybe, right? So
Oh, wow.
You have to improve, but you have to improve faster than the competition. The only other thing I would say is I mentioned earlier that CMS is definitely focused on more patient-reported outcome measures. That's a big topic. There are entities like MedPAC and others who are trying to influence the design of star ratings and change it. And there's some thought that should we not have HEDIS? Is HEDIS really maybe not measured as accurately as we think it? Maybe it's not as good a reflection of clinical quality as we thought it was. So should stars be almost entirely maybe operational and survey metrics? But a lot of people think, no, I mean, survey is so random. Like, is it really the best way? So there are these mixed feelings. I don't know what it looks like 10 years from now, but I think it continues to evolve. And the plans that are better at reading the tea leaves and investing and just trying to stay ahead and staying hyper-focused on reading every regulation that comes out will be the ones that win in the end.
Well, and we have folks like yourself helping them do that. So even better. Well, Rex, thank you. This has been an absolute joy. It's been very informative as well. So I want to thank you and all the people kind of listening in today on this episode of Inside Health Tech, and hope to see you again on our next episode. Thank you, Rex.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Appreciate it.
Inside Health Tech is a production of Apixio. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To learn more about Apixio's AI analytics solutions for healthcare, visit apixio.com. Inside Health Tech from Apixio.